So this morning, those in grades 5 and up have joined us for the whole worship service, and we usually do this about once a month. Research on youth spirituality reveals that relationships are essential for youth staying in the church. And so I'm going to invite our youth to begin building some of the blocks that are needed for relationships in a short activity that I'm about to lead. When my hands go up, but not yet, I'm going to invite everyone in grades 5 to 12 to sit beside an adult that they would like to get to know better. Cannot be mom or dad, and if you're 18, you're considered to be an adult. So, if you're in grades 5 and 12, I'd like you to choose an adult right now to sit beside someone who you'd like to get to know a wee bit better. All right, let's go. Only one person can sit with Isaac. Sorry, guys. There are lots of other wonderful adults. There's Alex up here and Holly up here. If you want someone a little bit closer in your age, there you go. All right. Okay, wonderful. Now, I know there are some of you who've come and you just want to worship quietly, and I respect and honor that. But then there are other adults who are a little bit more extroverted and gregarious. And if you would like to get to know someone better and you don't have a child or youth sitting beside you, I invite you, when my hands go up, to find someone new to sit beside for the short activity. Wow. Oh, thank you. We have a few who are willing to move. Shocking. Wonderful. So, relationships. How do we start building relationships? Well, the first thing that it takes is learning a little bit about one another. So, this first activity is really simple. I'm going to tell you a word. For example, chocolate. And when I say that word, I want you to picture what comes to mind. So for me, I thought of Smarties. And I pictured in my mind round discs that were colorful. Okay, so this is what I'd like you to do. And then I'm going to invite you to share your picture with the person beside you. All right, so the first word, muscle. Take about half a second or half a minute here. Picture muscle. What comes into your mind? Now I want you to turn to your neighbor and share what picture came to your mind. Okay, Shine, what came to your mind? Hulk, oh, really? I thought, you know, people who, when they go to like a bar or something, you have a bouncer. Yeah, that's what I thought of. All right. Wow, lots of chatter. That's great. So I'm going to draw your attention back to me. So I want you to raise your hand if this picture came to your mind. Biceps. Okay, quite a few of you. The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. Oh, yeah, got a couple here. Okay, I'm guilty, a bouncer. Nope. And this I blame totally on my brother, Brett the Hitman Hart. Anyone? Yeah, that's from a totally different generation. Or as someone mentioned, my friend Shine here, the Hulk. Okay, next word, are you ready? Ruth, yes. Oh, how come this is not turning on?
I thought of fish.
Oh, fish.
Muscles.
Fish. Oh, isn't that clever? Fish, the muscles, the shellfish. Oh, brilliant. Yes. Oh, never even thought of that. Thank you, Ruth. All right. So the next word, power. Power. Okay. Think about that. Now turn to your neighbor and share. Oh, really? That's okay. Why God? Oh, okay. When I thought about power, I was thinking about like the military. Yeah. So, you know, those airplanes and yeah, okay. All right. I'm going to draw your attention back here. Raise your hand if, when I said power, you thought of a superhero. All right, so I'm curious, what superheroes came to mind? Ben?
I thought of Superman.
Superman, all right. Other Ben?
Captain Marvel.
Oh, Captain Marvel. All right, Spencer?
Because it's an anime, but One Punch Man.
One Punch Man. No idea. Anyone else? Yeah, different generation. I gotta look it up. All right, wonderful. Okay, so if you didn't think of a superhero, who thought of an army?
Ever.
No? A prime minister or president? Oh, a few of you. Economic power. Electrical power? Oh, wow, okay. So, out of curiosity, like Ruth came up with something brilliant. I didn't think about the shellfish. Anyone else had a different picture of power? Susan.
Will Power, the race car driver.
Oh.
I thought of God, who is all powerful.
Wonderful. Thank you, Pat. And in fact, that's what Sean thought of. He said God too, so that's wonderful. Okay, next word. I want you to picture in your mind, this is a harder word. Value. Value. Okay, turn to your neighbor.
Oh, why would you say that?
That's a good one. I thought of Value Village. The store. What did you think of, Donna? Oh, that's wonderful. Okay. All right, I'm going to draw your attention back. So put up your hands if you thought of Value Village. Yep, there are a few of you. Yep. Money. Okay. Few more. Worth. Oh, a couple. Talent or skill. So, Donna, you mentioned
family relationships.
Family and relationships. And Shine, you said
our lives.
Our lives. Interesting. Okay, last one. Last word. Healer. What comes to your mind? Picture. And now turn to your neighbor and share. Doctor? Doctor or Jesus? Great. Okay. Okay, so raise your hands, please, if you thought of Patch Adams. He is a doctor, so who thought of a doctor? Yep. A nurse? Jesus. In our gospel reading this morning, the centurion thinks of Jesus as his beloved servant is dying. The centurion has heard of the stories of Jesus healing a leper, a paralytic, a man with a withered hand, and another with an unclean spirit. The centurion heard of Jesus healing Simon Peter's mother-in-law for a high fever, and then when the neighbors heard flocks of people coming to the house to also be healed. And in between all the healing, the teaching The centurion desperately wants Jesus to come and heal his beloved servant. But the centurion lives in a world where nothing is free. Plus, he's a military man, and he knows how authority and power works. You got to prove your worth. What's your value? And he's proven these things, and that's how he's come to have the power and authority that he needs. But all the earthly power in the world is not going to heal his servant. So he asks his Jewish friends, the elders, to ask this Jewish healer and teacher to come and heal his beloved servant. And the Jewish elders do so willingly because the centurion has been good to them. And remember, nothing is for free. And so they go to Jesus and they appeal to this healer and teacher earnestly. He is worthy. Worthy of having you do this for him, for he loves our people and he built us our synagogue. These Jewish elders know how the world works. There are rules. You get something, you got to give something back. Prove your worth. And so the elders talk about the synagogue and the centurion and how worthy he is to Jesus. And at first it seems that the elders have done their job proving the centurion's worth because Jesus goes to the centurion's house. But when Jesus is close to the centurion's home, Jesus is approached by another group of friends from the centurion. Well, what's going on? But unlike the Jewish elders, the leaders of the community, this group of Jewish friends say something different. Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy to have you come under my roof. Therefore, I did not presume to come to you, but only speak the word and let my servant be healed. For I also am a man set under authority, with soldiers under me. And I say to one, go, and he goes. And to another, come, and he comes. And to my slave, do this, and the slave does it. When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him. And turning to the crowd that followed him, he said, I tell you, not even in Israel have I found such faith. When those who had been sent returned to the house, they found the slave in good health. Did you hear the difference in what the friends said on behalf of the centurion? First, the centurion calls Jesus Lord, a title of respect. Two, the centurion calls himself not worthy, unworthy. What is he doing? He lives in a world where nothing is for free. You have to prove your worth. But he's breaking all the rules. He's just called himself unworthy. He's not fit. He's not adequate. He, the centurion, is not sufficiently strong. To the Jewish elders, in their eyes, on the surface, the centurion is way above them in the pecking order in terms of power and money. But the centurion recognizes that for all his power and money, he doesn't have what Jesus has. The centurion recognizes that he on his own can never acquire the power that Jesus has. Power. We often think of power as brute strength, physical force, the value of the dollar or talent or skill. And talent and skill is more than just Shawn Mendes performing at the Junos tonight, or Stan Lee's Marvel Comics. If you've ever had someone who is sick, a healer, a doctor, a nurse, they have talent and skill that is invaluable. But the truth, doctors and nurses can only do so much. The human body is a physiological, earthly thing, and it has its limitations. But not for Jesus. The centurion has heard about Jesus' power to heal. The centurion has seen and experienced the limitation of his own power and authority. When we think about our power, how much of it do you have? How much of it do I have? What are your limitations? What are mine? We have many limitations, and many of us have much limited power. But I would suggest that maybe for most of us, that there is often something we want to fill in our lives. But it doesn't matter how much we do an activity or go away, how much we buy something or play a game, how much we eat or hang out with friends. There's still something that's not quite whole. W-H-O-L-E. There's a man by the name of Derwin Gray. He was raised by his grandma because his parents were only teenagers when he was born. He grew up on the west side of San Antonio, poor. They were so poor, they couldn't afford the O and the R in poor. He believed that football would save him from violence, addiction, abuse, and chaos, and this is what he writes. Football was my way out of the hell I was living in. I believed it would lift me into the heaven of the American dream. Football functioned as my savior. It gave me love. If I played well, I was loved by my fans. It gave me an identity. I was Derwin, the football player. It gave me significance. I was a somebody because I was a great player. And football gave me a mission. My mission was this. Derwin, you can go to college and make something out of your life. For you see, he got a scholarship to Brigham Young University, and he was able to play college ball. And he believed in the God of football, and for a long time, the God of football was good to him. He was drafted in the spring of 1993 by the Indianapolis Colts as a strong safety. If you want to know what a strong safety does, I think Cater Ben Oliver might know. And if that all fails, you can ask their dad. But here is Derwin Gray. Having achieved his American dream only to realize it could not empower him to love his wife or forgive his father. His fame and money could not erase his sin, his shame, his guilt, and his fear. And it could not erase his insecurity. His insecurity. And then his body began to fail him. Now, those of you who are less than a quarter of a century, which means you're under 25, you won't quite understand the frustration people get with their bodies when they are older. First, it begins with no longer being able to pull an all-nighter for an essay. That happened for me in grade 12. I wasn't even 25 yet. Then you're sore for longer and recover less quickly after a hard workout. Then one day you realize with absolute horror that the creaking on the stairs is not the wooden steps, but they are your knees. And then they just don't bend the same way anymore. But when you are a professional athlete, and your body starts to go, when your body starts to fail you, you know that that is the beginning of the end of your career. These are Derwin's words. I was letting my God, football, down. I was unable to serve it. My body was how I made a living. As it began to give out, I was stripped of everything I thought gave me meaning. I was left with nothing, even though I seemingly had everything. On August 2nd, 1997, after lunch at training camp for his fifth season with the Indianapolis Colts, Derwin writes, I walked to my dorm room at Anderson University in central Indiana. As I walked, I sensed an emptiness, a brokenness, like I had never experienced. When I got to my room, I immediately picked up the phone and called my wife. I want to be more committed to you, I said. And I want to be committed to Jesus. And at that moment, I realized that God loved me. Not because I could run fast or jump high or because I was good or even for what I could give to him. I realized that as Jesus hung on the cross, I was forever loved and accepted by God. I realized my sin had been erased by Jesus' blood. It was as if I could see for the first time. The day I got infected with a virus called grace, the symptoms are now full blown. Derwin Gray found a power in God's love. What do you see? Who do I see? Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy to have you come under my roof. Therefore, I did not presume to come to you, but only speak the word and let my servant be healed. May we be healed in the power of Jesus Christ. Amen.